Hi, this is Rory O'Connor, creator of Rory Story Cubes and co-creator of the Extraordinaries Design Studio with Anita Murphy, and you're listening to Family Gamers.
All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode number 56, and I am your host, Andrew, and I am here, as always, with my lovely wife,
Anitra. That's me. What's special about 56?
Nothing. There's nothing special about 56. There's a lot of complicated math things that are special about 56, but...
Nothing we want to talk about on the show.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
Sorry, 56. You are the loser.
You are the weakest link.
Goodbye.
So anyway, so we've got a great show for you. In the last 2 weeks, we've had things like July 4th, which meant lots and lots of games. We've got a lot of really cool news coming out about the Family Gamers and some stuff that we're working on, so that's kind of awesome. We have a new segment to formally introduce to the show.
Yep.
How do you want to do this? Do you want to open up with our new segment, or do you want to talk about what we've been doing?
I think we should, as always, talk about what we've been doing.
All right. What in the world have you been doing?
Well, let's see. Starting with most recent...
Okay.
We started playing Purlock Holmes, Furiarty's Trail.
Yeah, okay. So first of all, this game, I like this game a lot.
The name is adorable.
Yeah, it's super cute. And I like the art. I'm a big art guy. Huge on the art.
The art is nice, and there's cute little sort of in-jokes on the art as well.
And actually, we enjoyed playing this game so much that it has informed our topic for this evening.
For the podcast.
For the show. Yep, so... So we've been playing some Purlock Holmes. That is from IDW Games. We're fans.
Yeah.
All right. What else?
What else? Been playing some more King Domino.
Why did the meeples have skirts, Mommy?
I don't know. Maybe they should call it Queen Domino.
Yeah. So I think they're robes, by the way. I'm going with royal robes on this one. But if you do have a copy of King Domino, take a look at the King meeples, and they're not normal meeples.
No, they're not.
So
they have skirts and crowns.
That was pretty nice. But I mean, if you haven't heard about King Domino by now, super popular game from Blue Orange, nominated for Spiel des Jahres. I should know if it won or not. I don't know. I'm pretty sure the awards have happened.
Don't know.
But we'll find out. But anyway, it's a great game. Highly recommend it. Review, it's going to be coming out for that in the next couple of weeks.
Yep.
We also played a game from Mayday Games called Macroscope.
Yeah, this was a neat idea, a little weak in principle, but we needed to try it a few more times to make sure. So Macroscope is a game where it's sort of Pictionary-esque in that everybody's competing to guess what the picture is.
But
everybody's competing. And instead of somebody drawing it, instead you're taking turns removing these little windows so you can see more and more of the picture. Try to guess.
So you roll dice, whatever numbers come up, those are the numbers of those little circle things that you remove from the top of this cover. And as more of them get removed, you can sort of make out what the picture is more and more.
Yeah.
We need to play this game more. I'm not super in love with it yet. I mean, I love the little box you get to build. It's one of those games kind of like Potion Explosion or Cult Express where you get to build a box, and it's got these really cool like loose tenon things.
It's a very well designed play set made just out of punched out cardboard.
Right.
And the design for it is cool. I like the idea in theory. I'm not so sure about the art of the pictures itself, because they're supposed to be line drawings, but some of them look weird.
Well, I do think they're kind of supposed to look a little
supposed to look weird?
A little bit, yeah.
All right. So to kind of throw you off.
Yep, exactly.
Fair enough. And I think our other big problem was that we tried the play method that probably works better if you only have two or at most three players.
Okay.
So
yeah, so we're going to play that game a few more times. We're not formally saying anything about it yet.
Nope.
But definitely something that we're checking out. You got to play, and I am super jealous about this. I don't know where I was. I must have been at bowling or something. You got to play Sushi Go Party with the kids.
Yes. So our kids have actually been playing Sushi Go Party for a while. Just them.
Well, that is awesome, actually. Were they playing it correctly?
Yes.
Even more awesome.
Because we taught them how to play Sushi Go.
Okay.
So Sushi Go Party works on the same basic rules, but you get to swap out You decide at the beginning of the game which of the possible like appetizers and desserts and stuff that you're going to use, and they all get different powers. So it expands the game out quite a bit.
Cool.
It was neat.
Nice. I like that.
We've been playing quite a bit of I can't say it.
Just Baron Park.
Baron Park. It's got an umlaut over the A.
I know, but we're...
Baron Park.
We are insensitive, white Anglo-Saxon Protestant Americans. We're calling it Baron Park.
I have a German heritage, I'll have you know. I'm trying to do it not proud, but at least not make them ashamed of me.
All right. Well, we have been playing more Baron Park. We love it. I'm Irish.
It is a lot of fun.
And stuff, so I'm just going to say
we Baron should just Park. Call it Bear Park.
Bear Park. We're playing the Bear Park game.
Yep.
It's great. In Soviet Russia.
Bear Parks you?
Parks Bear you? I don't know. I got nothing. I'm sorry to all of my Russian compatriots on the other side of the radio. I am not trying to be offensive because we cannot afford to lose you. So.
But it's a lot of fun. Yeah, especially once we added the achievements in.
Like, yes. Very much so. That is a great game. I cannot more highly recommend that game. It's very, very good.
There will be an official review coming out for that. Sometime soonish.
Sure.
Too. Yeah. What else? Our kids played Catan Jr.
And did I tell you that our middle Asher was begging me to play my first Stone Age?
Oh.
Which
we
is still
need to make some time
shrink wrap
to do that.
Yeah, we do.
As anyone who follows us on Instagram would know, we had friends over on July 4th. The adults played Baron Park, which was great. Our daughter somehow talked their oldest sons, 9 and 10, into playing Mall Madness with her again. It must be the allure of ATM cards and fake money, because all of these kids have played good games before.
I mean, they get like Boku like chick points or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever the... I don't know what the measure...
Friend points.
The point thing is or whatever, but like, he's a keeper, ladies and gentlemen.
They are good friends to suffer through Mall Madness, Littlest Pet Shop Edition. What cracked me up is, in the meantime, the 2 6-year-olds, ours and theirs, played Cube Quest.
Okay. I like it.
All right. So, you know, there's some good taste going on here.
Right. Fun times.
And that was after running around outside for a while.
Yep.
Because, you know, kids need to do that too. Mm-hmm. What else?
Got some old school games on the list, huh?
Yeah, I was going to say I introduced them to Rummy Cube, but that's not even true. They just pulled it out one day and they're like, huh, how does this work? And when I came out, they were playing it all wrong and I had to try to teach them how to play it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still not sure they've got it 100%.
Well, your mom was trying to teach them how to play too.
Yeah. My mom teaching a game always goes over real well. But she did, when my mom was here to visit, she brought out Racco.
Okay, so we don't have Racco.
We do not have Racco.
All right, because I saw it on the list and I was confused.
She brought out Racco, played it with both of the older kids, and then just played it with the 6-year-old. And they really enjoy it. I remember playing it with my mom. I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those games like easy to learn, hard to master sort of thing. So,
sure. I prefer Go.
Pretty cool.
While I sip my tea and act all erudite in the floating lotus position.
Of course you do. While my mom was here, we also pulled out several more games from the Klutz book. They played 3D Tic-Tac-Toe, they played Mount Kala, but mostly I wanted to note that they played an asymmetric game that the one in the book is called The Dalmatian Pirates and the Volga Bulgars.
Okay.
Say that 3 times fast.
This sounds familiar to me because I know I used to own this book, but I couldn't, if you put a gun to my head, I could not explain this game.
So in the book itself, it explains this is a variation on a very ancient board game called Fox and Geese.
Okay.
So the idea is, well, in this version with the pirates and the Bulgars, you're defending a fort.
Okay.
You can be the pirates and have 24 pieces to try to attack the fort. Or you can be the Bulgars and have 2 pieces with which to defend the fort.
Okay.
This is
sounding familiar. Yeah.
The Bulgars can jump pirate pieces. The pirates cannot jump.
Okay.
So the pirate's goal is either to occupy all 9 spaces in the fort.
Sure.
Or to surround the two townspeople so that they can't move anymore. The other additional extra rule in there is the pirates cannot ever move away from the fort. They can move toward the fort, okay, or they can move like side horizontally, side to side, laterally.
Yep. Okay.
So it's a really interesting power shifting kind of thing that, you know, no matter which side you play, you have to be careful with your strategy, but the strategies are not the same.
Right. That's interesting. I think asymmetric games like that are interesting to me.
I love the fact that in the Klutz book, it says, play this and then swap sides. And then after you've each played each role, whoever had the most pirates winning had the most pirates left at the end of the game, at, you know, their respective game wins.
Cool. So is that an implication that the Bulgars are more powerful, or?
In the book they say the pirates have an unfair advantage.
In terms of numbers.
In terms of numbers.
Sure.
I could see it going either way, depending on your strategy.
Okay. Interesting. Let's see. We've been
some video games.
Yeah. So
you actually sat down with a controller this week twice.
Well, I did. But first, I don't know. I did not expect when I played Dance Central that one time that it was gonna like open Pandora's box on Dance Central with our 9-year-old.
Oh my goodness!
This chick is crazy.
She has learned all of the like expert level moves for Gangnam Style.
It's ridiculous.
And now all of our children just sing it constantly.
It's like 2000. I don't know, 12. When did that come out? All over again.
12 or 13. Yeah.
I don't know. All whenever over again. It was. It's horrible. Yeah. It's horrible. I feel so terrible about it. So to make myself feel better, I bought the DLC for Zelda.
You did.
And yeah.
And you've been enjoying it.
That's some stuff. So for anybody mostly who has Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild, there's one thing about the DLC that's really, really awesome that I've played with so far, and that is this thing called the Hero's Path mode. And all it is really is if you go into the map and you hit, I don't know, X or whatever, it highlights the entire path that you have traveled over the course of you playing the game for the last 200 hours. First of all, I find the fact that they had to say this is only for the last 200 hours kind of hilarious. I think it says something about the game and the types of people who play the game. I only have a piddly 110 hours or so into it. So
exactly. And you've beaten the game.
Yes. But it's awesome because, you know, it's one of those games that's so big. And I felt this way about Fallout when I was playing Fallout 2, Fallout as well. It's so big that you don't even know what you're missing.
Right.
You can't keep track of everything. Big.
So now this keeps track for you.
Yeah. So you go into the, and it's retroactive too. So it's everything that you had done is,
right,
it's been, it's
from
been
the very beginning
from the very
on
beginning
the plateau.
The game, thank goodness. Otherwise it would have been
it wouldn't have been
addition.
Helpful.
But already, you know, I had, I think 93 shrines maybe when I installed the DLC. Mm-hmm. And already I found 5 more. It would have been impossible otherwise, because I wouldn't have even known where to go that
where
I hadn't
look.
Been before.
Yeah.
And so that's a huge value add, and it doesn't really actually add that much in terms of content to the game.
Right.
But it's great. I also tried the Trial of the Sword,
mm-hmm,
which is this, it's like a horde mode style wave attacking kind of thing. If you don't yet have the Master Sword, you can't do it.
Right. It's a little bit like that one weird island where they take away all your stuff.
Yeah, Ever Eventide Island, where they take away all your stuff and you have to, you know, scrounge up whatever. So yeah, it's exactly like that. So you start at the beginning and you have to, you know, find some tree branches and use them to kill some, you know,
Bokoblins
and stuff like that. It's really hard. I mean, I'm a pretty decent video game player, at least in terms of games like 3D platformers and stuff like that. Like I'm pretty solid.
And I was watching you do some of these modes, and I was like, I would have never thought of that. I would have died 2 levels ago on this.
It's brutally difficult. So there's 45 levels, and they're broken down into segments of 15.
Mm-hmm.
I have gotten to level 10 of the first one.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's really hard.
It's taken you several tries to get to level 10.
Three tries so far to get to level 10. I'm really curious to see if after 15 I can actually save again. Because that's the other killer is if you die, you are done. You load back out to before you put the Master Sword back in the pedestal to get into the trial. So it's really difficult.
And I've been saying to you, I remember there being a mode like this in some other Zelda game.
I believe you.
Some other modern Zelda game. If anybody remembers, please tell me. It's really bothering me.
Right. But the cool thing about this, and it's something I've enjoyed about Zelda all along, is that the kids love to watch me play Zelda.
Yes, they
do. And so I can play Zelda and watch the kids at the same time, kind of. And so it helps you out, like when you're making dinner or whatever. So that's awesome.
Well, and then you, as long as you don't mind playing with the running commentary of like, hit him in the head, daddy!
Yeah. Kill him! I'm a little worried about what it's doing to my children, but... You know, and there's a bunch of other side quests and stuff like that that I haven't even really explored. But I would say that Hero's Path mode alone is worth, I mean, not quite worth the price of admission at $20. But
if you're interested in any of the other stuff involved in that,
I would say definitely worth it to think about. So, Breath of the Wild DLC. And by the way, I should note that this is only, the $20 is all of the DLC, and this is only like pack one of two packs of DLC.
Okay.
So,
that seems
I feel like I got my money's worth so far. I also have on the counter, and I'm almost guaranteed I'm going to talk about this next show, Horizon Zero Dawn.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited.
Stay tuned, folks. In 2 weeks, he'll talk our ears off about that one.
Yep. Okay. So now is the time when we introduce our new segment.
Our new segment.
And this is, it's only new in the sense that it is a formal segment.
Right.
Because it's, so this segment is called Back Talk.
We don't want our kids to talk back to us.
But we do want you guys to talk back to us. And so all of our listener feedback, anything that has come out from our reviews or maybe some feedback from stuff we talked about on the show, we are going to include in this segment we call
Back Talk.
So take it away.
Let me start with Twitter. On our review of Outfoxed, Anna Vagen, I'm sorry if I mispronounce your name, she said, this is a great cooperative game. Use visuals to help students track clue information if they struggle with memory or language. I think that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Completely agree.
What else? We, on the Family Gamers community, our Facebook group.
facebook.com/groups/FamilyGamersAA.
We have not been as good as we should about posting podcasts and things, but we're going to get better at it because we get feedback there.
good motivation.
So the last time we put a podcast on there was our restaurant games episode. Our friend Ed Wilcox said, a great game for restaurants is Doodle Dice, with or without the cards. Without the cards, you could roll as per game rules and build your doodle and score for each die used. Nick Martinelli says, we play Fishy Tactics. We looked it up. This looks like a great game. Small, portable. It's ages 4+.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm going to put this on our wish list. I think it would make a great traveling game for
us.
There
you go.
And Roger Dumas says he hadn't listened yet, but his current restaurant game of choice is Control. It is a great small box 2-4 player game that's easy to play and also to pack up when the food gets there.
That part is huge. Like, being able to be like, oh, we're done, is mega important. Because if you're going to start losing pieces, the game is over.
Oh, so bad.
So.
And then, for anyone who's been hiding under a rock, we're doing a giveaway.
We are doing a giveaway.
We're giving away 6 copies of an original single-decker-sized card caddy.
Right. If you didn't get a chance to listen to last week's episode where we talked to Chris Nichols, who invented the card caddy, it's like a plastic case that basically fits a full deck of cards about. And it's got a little space to put a poker chip in it if you need to keep a poker chip around for, you know, tracking first player and, you know, stuff like that. Once you open it up, you can snap it together to form a draw and a discard tray. These things are great. So if you're interested in winning one of the card caddies, just head over to thefamilygamers.com. It's right on the homepage. You can't miss it. It's in there under blog posts.
Yep. And it'll be up there until, I believe, Sunday night.
Yes. So next week, Sunday night. So that is the, let's see, I can do my math, 22nd.
Sounds right.
Yeah. So definitely check that out. You have six chances to win, so your odds are very, very good.
Yes.
And in fact, one of the ways that you can get entries is by posting a comment on that blog post about what you would keep in your card caddy.
Yeah. And so I'm going to read some of those.
All right.
Edie says, I'd keep Uno. You might want to wait for a double width card caddy
for
that.
And they're going to be out this summer.
But they're going to be out soon. Panda Hill says, I need a couple of these for Pokemon.
Yep, absolutely. All right,
sounds good. Amy says, I'd probably just use it for a regular old deck of playing cards. I used to keep one in my car, but it got wrecked. There's so many different games I can play with the kids when we're bored.
Right. We talked about that last week. I used to have a deck of cards in my backpack, and it just, the cardboard box just disintegrated. Yeah. So.
And there's not much that's as versatile as a simple 52-card deck.
Completely agree.
Lindsay says, I'd use it for Skull King, my favorite trick-taking game. I looked up Skull King. It looks a lot like our favorite trick-taking game, Wizard.
Oh, cool. Very nice.
So, looks neat. Kristen F. also says, I'd keep a regular deck of cards in it. And Joseph R. says, if it's not big enough for Star Realms, which I don't think it is.
It's close. Definitely not sleeved, but maybe not. Yeah. Maybe if they're not sleeved.
Maybe. But maybe... Guillotine, however you want to say it, or Set will get a new home. He says, I really dislike the sliding box for Set.
Right.
I can hear him on that one. That I like the game, I hate the box.
You know, I mean, I didn't even think about this until literally right now, but there's a big push right now for micro games.
Mm-hmm.
And this something like this would be a really, really cool way, especially like that storage box that's coming out this summer, to put up like four or five or six micro games in one little tiny container.
Yep.
And those things, I mean, they are super durable.
Like the tiny Epic Galaxies or stuff like that?
Yeah. I mean, those kind of push the genre to begin with, and sometimes they're even smaller. You know, it's like one coin and one card kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they can get really small. So,
fair enough. That is our back talk.
All right. That is our back talk. If you would like to back talk to us, you can do it in any number of ways. You head over to Facebook, facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA.
Mm-hmm.
You can find us on Twitter.
@FamilyGamersAA.
Right, you can check us out on Instagram, where we've been posting lots of pictures of the games that we've been playing.
@FamilyGamersAA.
Yep. You can head over to our website, thefamilygamers.com. Or you can email us, Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
So there's lots of ways to get a hold of us, and we would love to include your feedback on the show.
And now we're going to take a break.
Before we take a break, we have news. We have, like, Family Gamers news.
We do.
So, very exciting. We met with the folks at the local Barnes & Noble. And we are going to start getting involved with the Barnes & Noble to run family game nights at the Barnes & Noble in Millbury, Massachusetts.
You heard it here, folks. If you are in central Massachusetts, you should totally come to the Millbury Barnes & Noble game night.
Right. So check out Barnes & Noble in Millbury, Massachusetts on Facebook. They post a lot of their stuff on there. This show is being released on the 17th, and the next game night is on the 18th. So if you're hearing this, it's either today or tomorrow, or missed it.
Or already gone. Sorry.
But we're planning on doing them at least monthly, and there's some other stuff that's going to be coming out. We'll be giving a bunch of stuff away, so if you are in the area, definitely recommend you come down. It's from 5:30 to 7:30.
All right. So that's good family gaming time. Not too late.
It's going to be good stuff. We would love to meet some of our listeners. That would be fantastic.
Absolutely. We want to see some faces behind the anonymous screen names.
But so that's our super fun news. I think there might be some more stuff that we're working on, but we have nothing to announce yet.
Nothing yet. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned for that. If you haven't been to our website recently, by the way, for the month of July, we're doing our Summer of Fun. So we're doubling up on our reviews. It's two reviews a week for the entire month of July. Mm-hmm. We're exhausted, but there's a lot of great content for you guys out there. So I highly recommend that. The day this show is getting released, we'll be releasing our review for The Mysterious Forest, which we've talked about a little bit on the show before. It's a memory game for kids 6+ that's based on the Wormworld Saga graphic novels.
Yes.
So check that out on thefamilygamers.com.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about our top five games that teach how to play games.
Right. And remember we said before this is sort of inspired by Perlock Holmes.
Yes.
So unsurprisingly, that's going to be on our list.
That's on the list, yeah. We'll be right back. So we picked five-ish games that we think are great for game education, teaching game skills, logic, deduction, strategic thinking, planning ahead.
Right. And, you know, I mean, we talk about this kind of idea a lot because, like, the whole premise of the Family Gamers is that we want our kids to be gamers so that we can play games with our kids, right?
Yes.
That's the whole thing.
Yes.
And so this is something that we've touched on a lot, but... you know, with Perlock Holmes, I mean, it was such a really great experience walking our kids through logical deduction that, you know, we talked about it and we said, well, we should really actually, like, focus on this for a show.
Yeah.
Right? And so that's what we're going to do tonight. And, you know, every single one of these games that we talk about, we'll talk about why we like it.
Mm-hmm.
And I guarantee there are other games...
In the same genre.
That follow that same kind of idea. These are just the ones that when we sort of thought about... different mechanics that we can use to teach our kids. These are the games that rose to the top for us or really were kind of the first ones that we thought of that we thought represented those things. So all of these games are presented in, it's not like we're starting at five and working our way up to one. And we're not even necessarily saying that these are the only ones that
these
we
are,
use or anything
these
like
are
that.
Our
these
top
are the ones
five,
that we happen
but,
to like.
Yeah.
All right. So, you want to start with Perlock Holmes?
So, in no particular order, start with Perlock Holmes.
Furriarty's Trail.
Yeah.
First of all, I love it. I just everything about this game just makes me smile.
It's pretty, I like it. It's, I mean, you can tell from the name, it's a little bit tongue-in-cheek, but then the artwork is totally child appropriate, but also kind of dark, like just color palette dark. Mm-hmm. It gets that mysterious detective-y
kind of
feel.
It's sort of this like weird noir aristocratic kind of.
Yeah,
I really like it.
Yeah,
I really really do. So Perlock Holmes is a game where what is happening is every player has in front of them a card that they cannot see. You can kind of think Kanabi in the way that there's a card that they can't see and everybody else can see. And as it goes around to their turn, they get cards in their hand that they can see and they show to everybody else.
Yes.
And everybody else can say that either that card is a dead end or it's a lead.
Yes.
And there's two things on the card. There's the character on the card. So I think there's five characters in the game.
There's
could
five
be,
characters.
Could be
there's
the suspect.
Toad, a goose, a raven, a dog.
And a rat. Right. So there's those, but there's also numbers 1 to 12 because it's the hour that the crime was committed.
Right. Or something like that.
So when they hold it up, if the card is a lead, it means either the person is correct or the time is
correct.
On or within one.
Yeah.
Right. So if the suspect that the person cannot see is like the goose and it's at 2 o'clock. If someone holds up a card that is like the rat at 12, that's a dead end. But if they hold up a rat that's at like 3, that's a lead because it's within one.
Right.
And so the really cool thing about this that we like is that this is, it's one of those games that's a mix between competitive and cooperative, right? So the goal of the game is to catch Furriarty.
Right.
Right. And so
if you don't catch Furriarty, everybody loses.
Exactly. But if you do, then you count up basically your victory points, which is how many of these suspects that you captured along the way.
Yeah, more or less.
And so the part of this that's really great with teaching, you know, the strategy, the mechanic, is to say, okay, well, you know, you have all of these dead ends. So what does that eliminate? You have these leads, so what does that include? And drawing out from the player the consequences or the decision points that they can make from what they have in front of them.
You're teaching logical deduction, is what you're teaching.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a little bit of larger strategy, but that's the main thing that you're, right. that you're teaching. Because of course everybody wants to guess correctly and catch the criminals if they can.
Right.
So.
So that's one thing that, I mean, we just really, really like about this game, because it doesn't, it's a different feeling than a true cooperative game, which we'll talk right. about next, where we say, oh, well, if I were you, this is what I would do, and this is why, which is fine, and there is a lot of value to that, but in this game, we're sort of pointing out where the lines exist and allowing them to connect the dots,
mm-hmm.
which is really neat and a lot of fun.
It's neat to see their brains work through it, too. Mm-hmm. I like it.
So the second thing on our list I just mentioned is cooperative games. So our top ones are Castle Panic and Forbidden Island / Forbidden Desert.
Yeah.
Right. These are games that we've talked about a lot. We really love them for their cooperative gameplay.
If we had to pick just one for teaching purposes, I would say Castle Panic.
I think I agree with you.
So these are cooperative games. So there's no hidden information.
Mm-hmm.
And because it's a cooperative game, you can both teach and model how to plan ahead.
Right.
You know, oh, hey, this guy is currently in the forest ring, you know, it over here. But that means, you know, and it's my turn. But that means when it comes to your turn, he's going to be in the archer ring. And when it comes to third player's turn, he's going to be in the swordsman ring.
The knight ring.
Knight ring. Sorry.
Not to correct you.
And so, like, because of the mechanics of, like, trading cards around to get the right hand to fight, you know, or get the best possible hand to right. fight the bad guys, you can talk through those elements mm-hmm. with the other players.
Right. Yeah. I mean, some of that reminds me of way back in the day, we talked a lot about Robot Turtles, and that's that teaching of logical progression kind of thing, mm-hmm. but that was much more abstract and that was much more asymmetric. This is a yeah. game where we have fun playing Castle Panic because they yes. get to kill the bad guys. Yes. Hey, how you doing? But at the same time, we're teaching these logical progression models.
Yep. Speaking of which, we got the expansion. Again.
Yes, we got Wizard's Tower. Woo!
Woo!
Okay.
All right. Sorry. Turning a little bit, how about something that is very competitive, Battlesheep.
Okay, yep, absolutely.
Battlesheep is very competitive. However, there is no hidden information at all.
Mm-hmm.
The level of strategy is actually fairly simple. And so it's pretty easy to talk through, even as you're being competitive with it, to say, you know, are you sure you want to do that with your stack of sheep? Because then, you know, it only takes one move for a player here to block you off. Or right. if you go this way, you can block off this player. Things like that.
Yeah. And I mean, you can testify to this so that when I say this, I don't just sound like I'm tooting my own horn. This is actually something that I employ when I play games with anyone. Whether
yes.
it's my kids or whether it's even a bunch of other adults. Even if it's against me, I'll be like, okay, so, you know, what you could do in this situation is this, and here's why. Just to help people kind of understand how
wrap
that particular
their game
works.
Yeah, especially when you're teaching somebody a new game in right. general. But Battlesheep is good because it's really easy to pick up how movement works.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little harder to wrap your head around what the effects of your move is
right.
going to be.
Right. Well, that's exactly what's so great about this is there is no hidden information.
Right.
Right. So if I'm helping somebody play a game where I've got a handful of cards, I'm almost thinking like we're playing Lords of Waterdeep and I've got a handful of intrigue cards yeah. and I make a suggestion to someone.
Yeah.
They're going to be like, yeah, right, because you're going to like blast me or whatever. You know,
right,
in a game exactly. like this where there is no hidden information, now that dialogue can be a lot more open.
Yes.
And you can say like, well, look, I mean, here's how these different pieces work. And really understanding cause and effect.
And it's not like when our kids play checkers and the oldest says, like, you want to go over here.
Right,
really?
Right, right. We're not talking about that.
Not so much with that.
Right.
All right. How about something to teach strategy to really young kids?
Mm-hmm.
The overall class here would be, like, pattern recognition, pattern matching type games. My personal favorite of these is Press Here the Game.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't talked about this one in a long time.
I want you to talk about this game because I like the game fine. You love this game.
I mean, for what it is, let's be clear here. This is a game aimed at like 3, 4, 5 year olds.
Okay.
But Press Here, the game, has a series of cards. One side of each card has three spaces for movement, and the other side of the card has six spaces. You decide at the beginning of the game if you're going for easy or hard.
Sure.
But the idea is that each player on their turn pulls a colored dot out mm-hmm. of a bag. Mm-hmm. The dots are blue, yellow, and red. Surprise, surprise. And then you have to figure out with the color dot you've picked where it can fit into a pattern on one of the cards that are spread out in front of everybody.
Right.
So if you start on a new card, you can put it anywhere you want because you're determining how the pattern goes. Mm-hmm. But if you're working it into an existing card, well, then you got to figure out what the pattern is. So you as the grown-up here can talk a really little kid through, like, you have to put it here, you can't put it there. But you can talk an older kid through, you know, like a five-year-old, say, well, if you put it here, then that means that only yellow dots are going to be able to go on this card. Sure. But if you put it here, that means that, you know, whoever gets this is going to have a red and a blue.
This is an incredibly difficult game to describe, considering how simple it is.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah.
So the purpose of the game is anytime you fill up a card, so you get the three dots on a card, you get the card, you get to keep it, and whoever has the most cards at the end of the game wins.
Right.
So it's still got a little bit of that, like, blocking other players out feel, but on a very, very basic level.
Right.
Yeah, so I really like it in that earlier age range.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Another example of this would be a Game Right game called Take the Cake,
mm-hmm.
where sure. you're putting sprinkles on cupcakes.
Right, right.
But there's usually multiple places you can fit something. So talking through which one's the better choice.
Right. So the last one that we have on our list is sort of a pair of games, I guess, one of which we've already talked about today, which is Baron Park.
Baron Park.
And its predecessor, I suppose, Patchwork.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the thing that's great about these is that you're teaching this idea, you can help to teach with this idea of planning ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to craft these parks, you have to get these pieces to fit together. Most of the pieces, there's multiples of them, so you can even show examples without affecting each other's parks,
mm-hmm.
if that's something that you want to work through. If you see kids getting frustrated, you know, oh, they've got sections that are just not getting filled in, you can kind of talk about what first of all, what they could do to mm-hmm. resolve that problem, and second of all, how they could resolve that in the future as they're building.
Yep.
And yeah, this is true. I think it's actually easier to teach that with Baron Park because you don't really have that cost barrier
in Patchwork
that you have in Patchwork. Because yeah. in Patchwork, you have to get the buttons and you have to figure out how much different pieces yeah. cost and all that stuff. You don't have to deal with any of that in Baron Park.
Well, the difference is in Baron Park, you have to build on certain spaces to be able to get more tiles.
Yeah, but that's a binary thing, right? So
yeah, I can see what you're saying. Yeah.
It's not, I don't think the planning is quite as difficult or variable in Baron Park.
Sure.
As it is in Patchwork, but it is a wonderful game. You know, again, there's no hidden information.
There's no hidden information, and it's one of those kind of competitive games that really doesn't have any direct interaction between players at all.
Yeah, except for, oh, you took my bear statue, yeah, you jerk.
Yeah, the only competition is competing over resources, most of which are not all that scarce. So the competition factor right. is low.
Well, the points are the real right. difficult
well, yeah, I know.
Part of the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, those are some games that we really like as games that we can use to teach our kids or other people different types of strategy, different ways to play some games.
Yep. We can teach logic and deduction. We can teach planning ahead.
Cause and effect.
We can teach how you decide what makes a, you know, when you have multiple options, how to weigh your options.
Sure.
What mm-hmm. is better.
Right. And, you know, again, we are not perfect. We do not know everything. And certainly there may be some things that you're coming to, that are coming to your mind. You're like, I can't believe you didn't mention, I don't know, Star Munchkin. I don't know. I just, that just popped into my head for some weird reason. Whatever that game is.
How to Make Your Friends Hate You.
Yeah. That's what you're teaching there. We would love to hear your thoughts on this.
Yes,
and,
please.
And we promise it will appear in a future episode's Back Talk. So head over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/FamilyGamersAA, or our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/FamilyGamersAA.
Or leave a comment on the show notes at thefamilygamers.com.
Right. Or if you're lazy and you have Twitter on your phone, just pull us up. At Family Gamers AA, send us a tweet, say, yo, this game, you need to remember this one and play that one. That's fine too. And maybe we'll get it and we'll take a picture of that game and we'll share it on our Instagram account.
Hey! Sounds good to me.
At Family Gamers AA.
So that's it. This was episode 56 of the Family Gamers podcast.
Hopefully we'll see you guys tomorrow night at Barnes & Noble in Millbury, Massachusetts.
Only if you're in Massachusetts, right. Though.
I mean, if you want to drive up or whatever, that's cool.
If you want to fly across the country, that'd be great, but we're not expecting it from you.
Right, absolutely. But we will be back next week with an interview, because it will be an odd-numbered podcast. We're looking forward to it very much. And until then, play games with your kids.